I, Ambrose A., having no family or worldly attachments, though at times ghosts have visited me and far-off waters still swell inside my mind, the Adriatic, the canals of Venice. I who carry the voices of the dead, where are they of the living? Who have traveled far, or have I traveled not at all? I who have read the secret pages of others, the sleepless woman, the epileptic, who have felt the world come to me in fragments, but never whole, who have known myself as one of those fragments, a misshapen piece, though isn't all that comes into the mind misshapen, partial, hurt. I who dream even now of one who can't sleep, and the one seared by wild joy in the moment before seizure. I who have loved facts, as others have loved bodies. I don't know if what I leave is a part of the material world, if it's burning or not, ashes, dust, lit only in the mind, or not. I have loved the facts of things, the lists, accumulations. The way, for instance, I can type the words magic characters into Google, and what comes up has nothing to do with anything I might have thought, but a page from my hyperlatex manual in which magic characters are explained as meta-characters, used as single character marks for various kinds of layout directives in a text, as where a paragraph break should occur. There are those also that protect a text from being interpreted. But how is this so? I, of course, know nearly nothing of these things. Where I can open a book and find among Venice's many relics is the body of St. Lucy, protectress of the blind. Or, in the 14th century, Venetian paper from the workshop of blank was embossed with such emblems as eyeglasses and gloves. And for a few moments, I am less preoccupied, less restless. I have felt the world touch me with its strange, unpredictable hand, and for a few moments have not doubted or recoiled from that hand. That's from the opening of Island of the Mad, a novel by Laurie Schek. And what a story it is. What a novel it is. This is one of those books that lures the reader in through its peculiarities, its oddities, and unlocks us in with storytelling that excels. As our story opens, we find our narrator, a fellow named Ambrose, making a sincere effort to explain why he's telling us his story. You see, he's a hunchback fellow with a rare bone disease. His bones have been breaking too easily since he was a young child. As we join the story, Ambrose is working in a never-named digitization lab, spending his work days with a coworker as each turn the pages of the books they've been assigned to copy into digital format, placing them on the digital scanner, and then moving on to the next. It is rote work, but rote work with a hint of intellectual stimulation, a stimulation that appeals to him since so much of his youth and adult life was spent in bed, recovering from the latest bone breaks. And so our narrator has become a voracious reader. And though Ambrose never discusses the books he is scanning with his colleague, who likewise does not discuss the books she is scanning with him, it is clear that both appreciate the opportunity to work with the printed word as their workaday jobs. Well, day melts into day, which melts into day, until one day, something odd happens. The woman with whom our narrator has been working is absent from her workstation. And as he and we learn, she is absent because of a strange illness, which has progressed to a point where she cannot, does not, sleep. And so our narrator, Ambrose, and of course us, readers, plunge into a modern-day quest to find the one physician his colleague tells him can perhaps cure her malady. Told it will not surprise you at this point to know through the means of a letter she has left for Ambrose at their workplace. Ambrose sets out on a quest that will take our narrator around the world through time and for much of the book exploring the watery environs of Venice, Italy. And so our story flows back and forth in time, back and forth in place, Venice, St. Petersburg, New York City, as our author tells her factually suspect fictional story, where emotion and the tricks of the mind become as important to the narrative as the storyline itself. A man moves his poor self to Venice to discover the bond with a woman whose name he does not even know, but whose comforting presence is ever surrounding him. As Ambrose tells us, why had I let myself walk the streets of Venice, even if only in a dream? The thought of going seemed absurd, yet the more I thought about it, the more I began to wonder if maybe I should go. After all, aside from Ambrose, who was born and died many centuries before me, she was the one I felt closest to on Earth, though it wasn't a closeness I could explain. Still, something about who she was, or what I sensed or believed of who she was, the hurt tendencies in her, a stubbornness and kindness, a withdrawal much like my own, had come to live within the fault lines of my bones, even though we didn't speak. On the envelope, there'd been no signature or initials, no return address. Could her name be on the memo I'd discarded? A joint email, maybe, with new rules for handling damaged books, or an update on the latest technology? But all I could find was the email she had at work that was no longer in use, mmwys@proscan.com. How could she have learned my name when I didn't know hers? I imagined her wide-eyed, unable to sleep, maybe feverish and pacing, a hand writing in a notebook. Was it possible my going to Venice could in any way help her? Over the years, I'd made a little money, had little use for money, but it saved some nonetheless. I'd kept my brown coat for 20 years, my few shirts for almost as long. For the next week, her workstation stayed vacant. I was sure in a few days they would replace her. How to speak of where I went and what I did? The verbs and their tenses line up like obedient soldiers. I think now they're wounded at the core, conflicted, hobbled, partly lost. Something shuddering outside them they can't catch, a rougher, truer breathing not bound by the clear coordinates of time and space. I once believed in, even as minutes glow on my computer screen and mapping sites calculate routes from starting points to destinations. All time and space more vulnerable, more porous than I thought. And so it is that our narrator presents us with a view of the world that is a normal one for him, but a view most of us don't dwell in. Though our narrator does, because of his hunchbacked body, his natural view of the world is seen looking down. And that looking down gives him a perspective quite different from many that we might have. And so as he and we, with him, wander the world, the mysteries compound. Will our would-be hero find the doctor his interlocutor is asked about, who can help her with her sleep disorder, maybe? Will he find the diary that his interlocutor claims will hold answers to his quest? And why the woman's abiding interest, Dostoevsky, in particular, the idiot? Along the way, the great Renaissance artist Titian and his obsession with red cloth, Pontius Pilate and his migraine headaches, and that Dostoevsky novel, The Idiot, all come into play. Island of the Mad is a journey into the mind of its protagonist with a sweep and a story that pushes us forward. This is a long, many-paged novel, and yet it's presented with short, short chapters that give us lots of white space on each page, and at the same time, plenty to think about as we turn those pages. Quote, this is something different. A poetic prose dream, page upon page of profundity, followed by page upon page with a single short line. You must figure it out or go for the ride. Once the hook is well set, you may well be in for an all-nighter of deep concentration, recalling those undergraduate days of joyful cramming. End quote. So wrote another reviewer from Goodreads. Island of the Mad is as much the story of Venice as it is the mystery that Ambrose slowly unravels in his quest. It's mystery as it is in his searches. This is elegant writing that is a delight to read and savor And it goes on, as I said, for page after page. It's a novel that urges us to ponder the unponderables, a philosophically tuned book that will appeal to those who enjoy discussing and thinking both great thoughts and small, and who enjoy getting lost in the books they read. Let's finish not from the end of the book, because you kind of have to get to the end to fully appreciate the end, but rather, let's finish by reading just a little bit from that mysterious letter that Ambrose receives early on and his early response to it, the response that is going to launch him into his quest across the world and across time. We start with the letter written by this mysterious woman to our lead hero. Of course, there is much I have left out. But you see, in my sleeplessness, these people come to me in these places. I still picture you in Venice. This not sleeping still feels strange to me. I suppose I will never get used to it. We'll just see more and more before my eyes. Even now I smell the scent of pilot's roses. Then slowly, maybe nothing. I don't know. There is so much to come in this sleeplessness, this silence, so many places I can go, must go. I am tempted to sign my name, yet for some reason I can't bring myself to do it. I think of you somewhere among the many canals of Venice. There are many beautiful names. And then Ambrose. To this day, I don't remember how the letter came. But I remember that from the moment I read it, it was as if for a second she was beside me, even as I knew she was an ocean away, even as I didn't really know her. Not one word had ever passed between us. But in her sleeplessness, she used the word comfort. She wrote of questions threading through storm clouds and fires, of subtle, receptive linkages, connections, and subversive acts that are a form of love. Of a life she would never get used to, yet it was hers. It's a bizarre, it's a maddening, it's a beautifully written book, Island of the Mad, a novel by Laurie Sheck. It's available if you want to check this one out at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.